You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. We would like to remind you to head over to the Sportsman's Nation Facebook and Instagram pages to check out the new trailer for the very first ever short film titled Tradition. We're really excited about this project and hope you will enjoy it just as much as we enjoyed making it.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. Like, what are you trying to do, Aaron? What would the end goal of Aaron Snyder in 20 years, if everything goes away that you would hope it would, what would that be?
You know, somebody asked me this recently, and I don't think they got the answer out of me. I wanted, honestly, my...
We stopped in Denver at the Kefaru International Headquarters to talk with Aaron Snyder. Colby and I were on our way back from Montana and had an awesome conversation where we talked about some of Aaron's motivations, some of his background in hunting, why he does what he does, his definitions of manhood. We talked about his motivations for being as driven as he is and as disciplined as he is. We talked about traditional archery and some of the methods that he's using, but also kind of contrasted it with other methods that work too. We had a fun conversation that's probably different than some of the other podcasts you've heard with Aaron Snyder. Be sure to check out the Bear Hunting Magazine Patreon page where we're gathering patrons for the Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel and this podcast. Check out Bear Hunting Magazine, the world's only print bear hunting magazine. And good luck if you're still spring bear hunting. It's like prime time right now, first weeks of June. And without further ado, Aaron Snyder, Kefaru, here we go. We're rolling. All right. Welcome to the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. This is one of the podcasts on our Montana tour. Colby Moorhead and I are coming back from Montana on a do-it-yourself bear hunt. We hauled our mules up to Montana, and we were coming back through Denver. So Colorado is in between Montana and Northwest Arkansas, and we are here at Kefaru in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. Is that right, Aaron? That's
correct, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, the Kefaru World Headquarters.
That's right, man.
Only one.
It's pretty stinking impressive, too. Really is. But we're here with Aaron Snyder. And for people who wouldn't, Aaron, you're a hard guy to describe, but for people who wouldn't know Aaron Snyder, which some of you may not, but I figure a lot of you do, Aaron, first of all, he works for Kefaru, and Kefaru is they make backpacks, they make shelters, I'm going to let you describe what it is, but Aaron hosts a podcast, Aaron does outdoor riding, Aaron is a prolific archer, got into traditional archery the last several years. He's a heck of a hunter. He's a heck of a shot. Kind of, you got started on Rock Slide, the forum, a long time ago. I guess a lot of people knew you through that, Aaron, through gear-related stuff.
I started that website.
You started Rock Slide.
Yep.
And now you are the infamous Aaron Snyder.
Probably a good way to describe it, yeah.
But hey, you're also a big bear hunter, and on this podcast we don't always just talk about bear hunting, but Aaron, man, how would you introduce yourself?
I'm the now president and CEO of Kefaru International. I got started just doing gear reviews, started a website, Rock Slide, got on a different podcast, Gritty Bowman, kind of was a co-host there, and I'm a bit introverted. I'm not too good at being in public with a large group of people, which to my probably downfall, but I get to spend, as you know, 150, 200 plus nights a year in the wilderness. I end up lucky enough to go on 20, 30, 40 hunts a year. And so, you know, for me, I try to just help people as much as I can, both with the gear, obviously, designing gear, not just for Kafaru, but multiple other companies as well. And, you know, my goal really wasn't to get into the industry like a lot of people's. My goal was to get into the woods and stay there as much as I could. And the industry ended up being a byproduct of it. So, yeah, that's probably not the best description in the world, but there you go.
What were your original introductions to hunting, Aaron? Did you grow up in a hunting family?
Well, my home, no, not really. No, a little bit. My hometown is a couple hundred people in the middle. The Pacific Crest Trail, it's in Oregon. It runs kind of right by my hometown. It's a logging community. And my dad hunted a little and, you know, got me into fishing and the outdoors. But I'm one of those guys from birth with it was just eaten up alive with hunting, survival, fishing. I picked mushrooms as a kid to afford school clothes. You know, did the same thing for my first bow. And it was one of those things that I don't know what that is beating. But anyway, it was one of those things I literally could not get in the woods enough, and that never left, even to this day. You see how much I get to hunt, and I can't. You can get sick of hunting. I will say that. You can get tired of it where you need a break. But, you know, if I had a choice, whether it be photography, which is something else I'm really into, or hunting, as long as I'm in the outdoors, I'm in my element.
Yeah. What was the first animal you took with a bow? I mean, in Oregon, what were you hunting?
It's probably illegal, to be honest with you. Not a lot of law in my home.
Statutes. statutes of limitations.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember. I'm quite certain it probably, you know, being honest, it probably wasn't the most legal method of take at that time. But there's not a lot of people or anything like that where I'm from. But I think it was a black-tailed deer. Actually, no, it was legal. The first one I shot was a black-tailed forked horn. I was probably 11 or 12 years old.
Okay.
I had just taken my hunter safety card, got my hunter safety card, so I was probably 12. And I didn't hunt as much when I was younger. I was on a trail crew team, and I got to do a lot of backpacking through the wilderness, learned a lot about, you know, what ended up being backpack hunting. I fished a ton when I was younger, and I hunted a bunch. I mean, I hunted during seasons, but I wasn't very good at it. I didn't have a great mentor. You know, that came, you know, later where I, you know, got better and better and better the more I hunted. And I definitely more self-taught, you know, which is probably why I try to take so many people under my wing. It's a rough road when you're self-taught, so you got a lot of bumps.
Tell us about Kafaru. Somebody who doesn't, like, I wouldn't have... Probably 5 years ago, I didn't know about Kafaru, but it's a pretty incredible company. I mean, you just gave us a short tour of the headquarters here, and everything is American made. Everything is made right here in Colorado. Every component of the packs, the shelters, the clothing, all the stuff that you're making. I'd say that's super unique, and I know that everything. I think I've heard maybe you say it before, but I mean, there's no corners cut really on anything. You're trying to use the best possible materials, lightest weight materials, and just
not always the lightest weight. Definitely the best bang for the buck. It may be a little heavier sometimes, but more durable. But the most functional sometimes. Sometimes it is the lightest weight. Kafaru actually was started by Patrick Smith, who started Mountain Smith, which is back in the day was an extremely large mountaineering or backpacking company. He sold that and then started Kafaru International. He is in Patrick Smith.
What does Kafaru mean?
It's rhino in Swahili, so rhino tough gear.
Got
is where it.
It
comes from.
Got
And Patrick, who's basically like a father to me now, you know, the short version, I came in here to test the pack and write a review about it. And I was like a bad penny. I guess I never went away. He had daughters, you know, all daughters, and their husbands aren't really into hunting or the outdoors. And it was a good fit. I think he saw in me a lot of him and his youth of from survival or eating marmots or, you know, it's one of those. I just did a podcast with someone else and they. Like one of the things Patrick's like, you know, have you ever had a marmot? And I was like, well, yeah, of course I've had a marmot. Well, most people this day and age haven't eaten marmot or squirrel or
have
even
eaten porcupine.
Yeah, we talked about that on the podcast too. You got to skin them from the leg up.
Okay.
By the way,
they taste kind of piney in Alaska. That's all I know.
They do. They do everywhere. They're not great either. They're a little tough sometimes. But I've eaten just about everything. But those were things he was maybe quizzing me before I worked here. We'd backpack into a lake. You know, keep in mind, he's 76 now. So. 68, 69, and we'd hike in, and I think he should have been a teacher or a, you know, professor. He's very intelligent. I feel dumb when I'm around him. His vocabulary is off the chart.
He's been on the podcast some.
Yeah,
I hadn't listened to it yet, but I want to hear him.
Yeah. I was trying to get him liquored up because he's much funnier when he's got a little whiskey in him. But he would, you know, I think he wanted to be able to teach me more. But I had good. He's taught me more about being a man than he taught.
Yeah.
Like I didn't. There wasn't a whole lot to learn.
What does that mean to you, Aaron? Because that phrase could mean a lot of things.
Well, you hear people. A lot of people talk about, let's say, you know, like extreme ownership. Well, that's not just some stuff you put on a T-shirt. You know, that means owning up to, you know, whether it's your fault or not. And as you take over a large company,
right.
One way or another, it's your fault. Whether it's your fault or not, in the end, it's your fault, right? So, and obviously I had some leadership skills behind me before, but he also taught me to, you know, calm down. I'm a pretty high strung guy, and he taught, you know, he also, you don't need to take over the world, you need to be happy. And, you know, he even worries about me now stressing out, and he is the kind of guy that if I was super stressful, no matter what was going on, he'd walk in and be like, you need to go out in the woods. And he's like, you know, take 4 or 5 days and you know, get away. And also that when you test things, you know, and I'm not answering this question very well, but he would not come out with some products for 10 years of testing. And so he, you know, never rush anything, like take as long as it needs to be tested, which is why we don't have a lot of failures. You know, and so I just, you know, as far as taking care of family, everything like that, and just being a better person, you know, he's been very good at me about that. As far as the outdoors, there wasn't a whole lot for me to learn. I'm not saying that on a bragging aspect. It's just I'd been able to do so much. What I did need to learn, or what he wanted to teach me, I'm not a gun guy. And so he's a reloading fool.
Mm-hmm.
I might as well be talking about golf. It's just not my thing.
Right.
And he actually made fun of me a bit for being a bow hunter. He's like, why do you do that? You aren't going to kill anything. And he didn't say it like that, but basically, and I'm like, no, I'm pretty good with this thing, you know? And I think the first year I worked here, I think I flipped over 17 or 20 animals, and he never brought it up again. So now he's very intrigued following along, because I'll go on hunts like that Owdad hunt that, he's Owdad hunted and was like, man, that's almost impossible. And
you got him with a stick, bro.
Got him with a stick on first day, basically.
Yeah, right on.
About run a mile to get him, but I got him.
Yeah.
So either way.
Hey, let me go back to the question that you said, because I liked what you said about you learned how to be a man. What would you say, Aaron, is like inside of that process? How old are you, 42 or something?
Yeah, working on 43.
Yep. 43, okay. What have been your biggest struggles inside of life? Not even talking about bow hunting, but I mean, I appreciate your, and I think this is why people like you and respect you, even if they don't like you, is your it's clear that your passion and extreme dedication to the things you commit yourself to are legit. And honestly, most people don't have the internal technology or architecture inside of them to really commit themselves to something. What would have been struggles inside of your life that you have overcome? That's a broad, sweeping question, Aaron, question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I tell you what, I haven't overcome is overcommitment. You know, and you hear all kinds of stories about me that I'm like a royal a-hole to some people, and then you talk to guys that are close to me and they're like, he's the most giving dude I've ever met in my life. I mean, to a point, Jake Downs is a guy that recently he and I come friends, and he's like worried I've been so nice to him. And one of the things when you're that nice, sometimes you overcommit. I'll overcommit on hunts. We just talked about that, where You know, I want to help so many people, and then I end up letting some of them down. That's a problem I'll probably struggle with my whole life, because you just can't, you know, with a busy schedule, I do my best. But one of the things I've said I've overcome the most is I have a temper. I have when I say temper, not fly off the handle all the time, passive aggressive temper. I'll let things slide and slide and slide, and the next thing you know, I'm choke slamming a dude. True story. Like, that's happened many times to where, and Patrick's helped out with that, where I really have been able to take a big step back, look at the giant broader picture, assess, and then get everyone together, whether it be just me and another guy or me and 20 other people, and kind of assess and look at it from all sides of the fence, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, there's always, if you and I have an issue and you talk to a guy, you're going to be right. And I'm looking at Colby Jack here. And if I'm going to be right, if they talk to me, I've gotten really good at taking a step back and say, hey, I'm owning up to this part of it, but this part's yours, man. And, yeah. And that's been something I've really tried to work on as a leader and a person.
Yeah, just being direct with people, is that what you mean?
Yeah, and it's hard for people.
Yeah.
It's very hard for people to be. I like people to be very direct to me.
Yeah.
That does. People do not deal well with that.
Let me ask you something about, I think part of manhood is also humility.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, and I think what people perceive about you is that you're, because, I mean, some people could say, well, there's a part of just knowing who you are and mm-hmm. confidence in your identity.
Yeah.
I just am what I am, and I'm not going to undersell it, and I'm not going to oversell it. I just am who I am. And I think you're good at just saying, hey, I'm a good traditional archery shot. I've committed the last 3 years of my life to becoming that. And if some people said it, they would say, that guy is arrogant, that guy is blowing smoke, you know.
Oh, but people still say that about me all the time.
I think they do, but, and they may, and maybe they have the right to say that, but I think that what you have, that I have seen dealing with you on a personal level, is, I think humility is inside there, which is good. Let me just put it that way.
Well, because I talked to a few people about this, because I'm like, I don't consider myself arrogant. I consider myself very confident. But from what I know of arrogant people, they're not able to say, I suck at this, or this was my fault, or where I'm the first guy to say, I suck at guns, or man, I'm horrible at paperwork, or hey, Clay, I'm an idiot. I forgot to send you this article. You know what, if that makes any sense?
Well, and I think that's what I'm saying, is that you take responsibility, you're just confident in who you are. And I think that's what all of us really are trying to do, is just walk in our identity. One thing that we talk a lot about inside of our church and stuff is identity, knowing who you are. Identity is power.
Yeah.
Really, knowing who you are and not trying to be something you're not, and not trying to, you know, just you are who you are, and utilizing all the things that you have for furtherment of what you're doing.
No, I agree. And I'm, as far as on the spiritual side, I'm a bit of an odd duck, because I am not the most spiritual person in the world, but I watched Joel Osteen, The Blinker. And he had
didn't think that this was going to happen on this podcast. I didn't think his name was going to come up.
I'm a unique dude. As I say that, I'm sure I'll get arrogant comments about that. But like, I've read the book, The Five Love Languages, like 3 times to make sure I'm a good husband.
It's good.
First time I read it was because I got a divorce. And it actually helped me pick up chicks. The second time I read it, because I didn't want to lose one. And the third time I
read
it,
may have been ill motivation there. I don't know.
No, and it was. I mean, being honest. And then the third time I read it was to make sure I keep the one I got.
That's good.
And there are times and things that I will, like with Joel Osteen. Am I watching it for maybe the same reasons you two are? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm definitely watching it to become a better person. And. Yeah. When he had talked about that, and Amy is a bit of enamored my wife from time to time, because I'll say, yeah, man, I can shoot. You know what? I can shoot. And then you talk about turkey combat. Man, I suck with the diaphragm. I just can't do it, man. That's all you. I don't find that I like people that have those characteristics to where one of the reasons I, Frank and Jake Downs and Cody, three guys that are I'm super close with, is they'll do the same thing. They're going to tell me their strong points, and I want to hear them. And they're going to be honest with their weak, because those are just important as the strong ones. Like,
yeah,
if you think I'm someone is all everything in the world, and then you find out pretty soon they are deficient in half of them and excellent in the other half, that's bad. You need to know the deficiencies. And so I try to just be as upfront as I can of what I'm good at or not good at.
That's a good segue to maybe a couple other things. Let me go ahead and say, just because I've already got off track here, but I don't really have a track. I wanted to talk to you about Kifaru.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about your traditional archery. We got quite a few listeners that I think listen to this podcast because we don't focus on traditional archery, but you know, we end up talking about it because I hunt quite a bit with trad equipment. And then thirdly, I want to eventually get to bears. It's good to hear a little bit about the, you know, kind of your backstory and really some of your maybe motivations, and maybe that's a good question. We'll take this question and then we'll go to trad archery, okay?
All right.
What are your goals inside of hunting? I mean, like, if you get to hunt as much as you do, and that's even a broader statement from even a professional, because I know you're in the outdoor industry. Like, what are you trying to do, Aaron? What would the end goal of Aaron Snyder in 20 years, if everything goes away that you would hope it would, what would that be?
You know, somebody asked me this recently, and I don't think they got the answer out of me. I wanted, honestly, my number one goal is to be able to go hunt all the time and be off social media. I do not like social media at all, but I'm forced. I mean, I like, as I say that,
you're
I
bet, on that.
Well, I love helping people, and I like telling people the story because it motivates them. I don't know how many emails I've got about saving guys' lives, diets. Guys are talking about committing suicide. Before you came in, I spent 20 minutes talking on the phone with a dude that was ready to quit his job because he was freezing running a jackhammer, and his buddy said, you got to listen to Kifaru Cast. This dude was a construction worker, and he said, saved his job. He listens to
guy
it all
you
day
didn't
long.
Know?
No, I don't know. He's from Montana. I don't know who he was. Yeah. But those things keep you going, but I'm not a limelight person, and sometimes I'll get flack about that, and I'm like thinking, if you knew me, like Landry will tell you, like, he laughs because people come into camp and I'm like shying and going in the corner. I'm just not good at that. I look down a lot for whatever reason in public. I have trouble looking in people's eyes. It's just not my thing. Remy Warren seems to be a lot like that too, from what I've seen. But my goal is just hunt as much as I possibly can, spend as much time in the field as I possibly can. I've got no goals of the super slam or certain, you know, like whatever. Like, there, I'll have a goal, like we were talking about. I'm really wanting to shoot a really big mountain goat, try to shoot the largest with a stick bow. But that's not because I'm going to enter it in the record book. That's just because I'm a goal-oriented guy.
Yeah.
I really not, you know, that's just what I'm going in with, but it's the way my brain works. Like, when people said I couldn't kill an owl dad with a stick bow, I really was like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna figure it out, you know. And if I don't get it done, it's
so
just for my
where,
own
where does that
brain.
Come from, Aaron? Like, because it do you have something to prove,
you know?
Because
Lander Lander was a shrink, right? Did you know that?
No.
All right, so Lander's had me on the couch multiple times. I've got some dad issues in the
sense
of...
We're talking about Jeff
Lander.
Lander
with Primitive Outfitting.
Up in British Columbia.
My dad...
Who you skipped out on me because I'm going to be there next week, and Aaron was supposed to be there. We're supposed to have this podcast in British Columbia over the hide of a dead bear with the smell of bloody hands.
Spoiler alert, there's one outside.
We do have a bloody... We do have a bear hide in the mule trailer. Aaron...
We're close.
We're totally getting off track. We're training mules as we speak. Did you know that?
Oh,
I've got a bear hide in the trailer.
Smell?
With my young mule who wouldn't let me put the bear hide on her.
Yeah.
And so she's been riding with a bear hide in the trailer for the last 5 or 6 hours. It's been below 40 degrees. So anyway,
that's smart.
Okay.
That's
motivation. Smart. No. Proving something. Got something to prove.
Man, I would say, and hopefully my mom doesn't listen to this, I do not have a great relationship with my dad at all. And he's not a great dad. And wasn't really, you never got a good job from him ever. And
right.
If I was to guess, that's between him and then my coach, football coach Perkins, in a good way, my coach Perkins, you know, one basically left me to like, is anything ever good enough? Cause in the reality was he just never paid enough attention. But, and then Perkins showing me anything is attainable as a human if you work at it hard enough.
Cause, I mean, you had a football coach that was really influential.
Oh yeah, I'd kill a building full of people to keep him safe. Yeah, he is the guy for me, and I do a bad job of keeping up with him. But he's been on the podcast before,
okay.
But really a turning point in my life because I was a peckerhead as a kid. I fought a lot. To where he made you want to be a better person. And when you succeeded or you failed, he was there to say, "Suck it up, man, butch up. You're gonna have to try harder." And when you succeeded, he was there to say, hey, man, that's what happens when, you know, you put the work in.
Right.
And that work ethic is what carried through. Now, as I say that, I have trouble filing my taxes. I can't remember to take the garbage out. But if you want to race to a top of a mountain or you tell me something can't be done, I'm going to find a way. Or I'm going to try. And I think that kind of discipline, you know, and that ability to not do very good at failing came from those one, my dad, who's and then, sorry, you might want to write that one down. And then Perkins,
edit,
who,
edit.
you know, and a lot of other people along the way. But I think that's what, you know, at that young of an age, I'm amazed how much that, in a good and bad way, echoes for the rest of your life.
So where does that stop, Aaron?
I don't know if it ever will, probably till the day I die.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't yet.
But you know what? I think insight is probably the most powerful tool that we have as humans to be able to perceive the things, because everything that's happened to us does have influence on us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, like, I mean, I think about my hunting, because I mean, that's a big focal point inside my life. I mean, aside from obviously my family, my wife, my children are absolute number one priority, but I mean, from a outside of that, I mean, hunting is a focal point. And my dad was a great dad.
Yeah.
And he was a bow hunter. He was bow hunting before bow hunting was cool. But I received a ton of validation. The most validation that I received as a kid was when I killed something and brought it home. And Dad was like, good job. I mean, and so sometimes I look at that, Aaron, now and say, am I still... You know, you gotta monitor your motivations. Like, am I still chasing validation inside of this? And is that the correct thing for my life? And, you know, these are things I think about all the time. Because the decisions you make inside your life, the motivations for what you do are significant, you know. But
I'm glad the podcast is going down this road, because sometimes we're not very serious on our podcast all the time. And there's a lot of... Quite honestly, your listeners may not want to listen to it. It's explicit, and there's not a lot of serious talk on there. And I'm not very good. I'm not a Donnie Vincent or a Brian Call where I'm going to write a poem, right? I'm not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes to motivation, like, I think people, without coming off too arrogant, I mean, at the bottom line, you've got you, right? And that's all you've got. And that's one thing I like about bow hunting is – can't really blame anyone else, right?
Yeah.
It's all on you. And when I say on you, meaning you can buy the best gear in the world, right? Minus paying for outfitters, you can buy gimme hunts, but let's just public land hunts. You know, it's all what you put into it, and it's common sense and field craft and the whole nine yards. And at the end of the day, right, I mean, you've got you, and you're the only one to blame. And I think that's one of the reasons I like solo backpack hunts, or not necessarily solo, but backpack hunting is it's all on you. I prefer that. So
yeah.
But I think, though, if I was going to give people, you know, advice is, you know, you get, you know, getting into the industry stuff. What am I, you know, how do I get into the industry and all these different questions. And, you know, really, if you just focus on what you're doing, being the most successful hunter, if that's what you want to do, the most successful hunter, the most successful shot, the best shot you can, industry's probably going to come to you. Well, when you need an article, you go to guys that shoot bears, right? You're not going to guys that go on bear hunts generally. You're going on the guys that go on bear hunts and are successful. People want to hear a success story.
Yeah.
Well, if you focus on bear hunting and you shoot bears, Clay may be getting a hold of you, right? And rather than focusing on selfies and the gym,
right?
Nothing wrong with going to the gym. I go every day. But focus on what you're wanting to do. And if that's be a greater, better hunter, probably maybe forget some of the BS.
Part of what you said originally was that your goal is just to be a hunter. Man, I'm just like you in terms of getting into the outdoor industry. I never had a goal to be in the outdoor industry. I never had a goal to make a living in the outdoor industry. But my passion for it, it found me, you know. I mean, I built my life back when I had no intentions of ever being full-time in the outdoor industry. I built my life around a prioritization of being in the woods when the white oak leaves turn maroon around October the 20th. That's what I built. Aside from other motivations inside of family, I had my own business because of that, and then things began to happen. But to this day, Colby and I were talking today, guys. A lot of guys that do video, I hear them talk, and it's like their passion is video, and they love to hunt, so they do hunting videos.
Right.
And to me, it's, you know, and I think to you as well, and I think to a lot of people, it's reverse of that. My passion is hunting.
Yeah.
And then from that stems, well, we are going to make media. We're going to do video. We're going to do photography. And so, but it's fueled from this place of, man, we're hunters.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good core motivation. Not I want to be a famous hunter, not that I want to be well known, but it's just, man, I want to hunt. I want to be a good hunter. Yeah. I constantly respected growing up just guys that were the real deal, legit guys that weren't looking for validation. I mean, they weren't looking for fame. They weren't looking to take their buck down and show it off at the parking lot, even though I like to do that. That's good. But the guys that were just legit.
Well, that's where that conflict internally comes from for me.
Yeah.
The first thing
now
I do
it's
when
social
I,
media, not bringing the deer down to the...
Same thing, though, right? The first thing I do is, because I kind of... I don't have to, but I put it on social media. Well, I mean, I'm in the business of selling backpacks, and I have to get my name out there. And if you don't post what you've done, you kind of become inconsequential. You become non-existent. And so you have to. I want to get to a point where I don't have to, right? I just can go hunting and not have to worry about it. So as I say that, I have been very blessed, obviously. I started an arrow company with a guy, broadheads of this company here. I get to hunt more than probably anyone dang near. You know, I get to hunt a ton. And so I've been very blessed. It's just at the end of the road, I would like to just be able to go hunting and photography. I'm about as addicted to photography as I am traditional archery.
Yeah. And that's some great stuff. I love your Instagram.
But
like in your prints and stuff, like you can really tell it's a passion. Does that ever help like bring calm or slowness to you? Like hunting does sometimes.
No, not somewhat. You know what? It's kind of weird with photography. For a few years there, I helped more than I hunted by far. And the way the industry works, there's a couple guys specifically who like talked crap saying, "Well, he never kills anything. He just helps people." And I'm like, man, what does the industry come to where it's bad that I'm helping so many people? Because I had shot enough stuff that I just like going along and taking pictures.
Yeah.
Well, obviously in the position, I mean, now I kind of had to do a little bit of a role reversal and just start piling up animals. But I'm lucky enough now where I'll take the camera with me and photograph my own hunts as well as many others. And, you know, you start talking about the reasons why you're out there. If you're out there to get more social media likes, you're out there for the wrong reason, in my opinion. If that's a byproduct of it, great. But you should be out there for the love of the animal, the love of the outdoors, the love of the sport, whatever you want to call it. And for me, I think that shows with the guys I hang out with that they could care less if, you know, they're out there to hunt and everything else is a byproduct of that.
Yeah.
I just think like a lot of your still images really capture something, you know.
I wrote an article about it in, you know, Stopping Time. That's what I try and do, you know, and video is much better, right? And I suck at video. Like my mule deer hunt was horrible. It was me looking like I was in a concentration camp daily in my tent because that's about the only time I turn it on. But I had amazing photos of the hunt. And if I can get, you know, the best time is like in the misery of the hunt. If I can get a photo of that, that really shows like there's a photo of my wife, and she's got baggy eyes. She just woke up. The sting's coming out of the coffee. We're in the, she's got her headlamp on, and it truly stopped. You could tell, like, Jesus, she's tired. It's first thing in the morning. She's drinking coffee. I find nothing more gratifying than, as much as shooting an animal almost, as being able to
capture
stop that.
A good image.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one on the wall back here of a doll sheep that I took, that is another time where the guy's coming over the hill. Anyway, it's one of those where I'm like, I remember that like it was yesterday, and was able to stop that time for a moment. Yeah. And for guys to remember it. So
yeah. Yeah. Right on. Traditional archery, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
So 2-3 years ago, you started shooting trad archery.
2016.
Hey, yeah. I'm gonna make a claim here, and we're not gonna test it. So it's just gonna, people are just gonna have to make their own decision. I think at 10 yards, I could shoot with you with a trad bow. I think if we could go out in the parking lot right now by my mule trailer, 10 yards, I could shoot with you, Aaron.
I agree.
Because I know that you're a gap shooter, so 10 yards is probably a little tough.
Well, actually, 10 yards, you'd be in trouble. 18 to 22, you might have trouble. But I don't shoot gap the whole. I shoot gap out of about 28 and out. I shoot gap. I shoot instinctive inside of that.
Okay.
And you know, with traditional archery, the first thing I'll say is I was catapulted ahead of everyone else because of the clumps with it, Rocky Mountain specialty.
They live over. They are right here.
I was just there shooting before I came over here.
Yeah.
And I started shooting a stick bow, actually more as to prove a point. Did a podcast. I've told this story about a million times. Did a podcast on ethical shooting distance, because I was the a-hole dropping bombs at 100 yards at animals sometimes, or even farther with a compound. And anyway, wait, I can't even say a-hole.
I just always edit in.
I'm just taking notes.
I got to remember that for the when I keep talking.
Acronyms are sketchy.
Okay, gotcha. So I pretty much had broke down, you know, as far as what's ethical for a compound and a stick bow, and I'd made fun of stick bow hunters forever, and was about the farthest thing from a traditional archer. And I got a bunch of emails after that podcast about you're a crappy hunter. You know, pick up a stick bow and see how successful you are. And the way my mind works, which is, I think Tom Klum is, I don't know if enamored, but he's amazed by how my brain works. And I sold every piece of compound equipment I had literally inside of a week. I had a giant wad of cash. I walked down to Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear, and well, the rest is history now. So yeah.
That's how you got into it.
Yep.
Well, the Aaron, I had a, so 30 seconds about my traditional archery career. Grew up compound hunting. In 2005, started shooting a stick bow with somebody, gave it to me, but never hunted with it.
Mm-hmm.
Killed my first deer maybe in 2007, but it was just like a hap, you know, it was just like, I'm going to try this for a couple of hunts. I'd been shooting. But then in 2016, it was a long story, but I ended up through a unique situation, ended up giving away my bow 2 weeks before season, my compound bow.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really intentional. It was just something I felt like I needed to do, so I did it. And so the only thing that I had coming 2 weeks into season in 2016 was the stick bow. And I'd killed, by that time, I guess I had killed two bears with it, and I'd killed a deer with it, killed a coyote with it, you know, but just piddled, never 100% committed. In 16 is when that's all I had. And so I went into the 16 season and killed seven animals in a row, two bears, four deer, and a mountain lion with a trad bow that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a unique situation, just like what you did. It's like when you have no other choice.
Yeah.
And you're a hunter. I mean, it almost felt like I was a caveman.
Yeah.
That they dropped out in the woods, and you know, you had sinew and some juniper and some stone points, and you were like, you gotta survive. I mean, that's the way I felt.
Yeah.
I mean, even inside of, from an outdoor media position, I mean, like, I understand, you know, I mean, we're hunting and we're gathering content for, it's like, I needed to take some game.
Yeah.
And it was such a powerful experience to just be like, I will either be successful with this or not. And I had a good streak. And But anyway, so it sounds like that's what you did. You went cold turkey there for a year.
Yeah.
And then you got out of it for a while.
For a year, yeah. Well, eight, you know, whatever, part of one season.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It was for a couple different reasons. One, the amount of money I lost in endorsement contracts is crappy, right? You don't get paid to shoot a stick
from,
bow.
Okay, from compound stuff.
From compound, yeah. And there was a lot of pressure, but even today there's pressure to shoot a compound. I can shoot one pretty well and be successful with it, but how much the end of it, of the compound, was in with Jeff Lander, and we were in Alberta. I made a ridiculous stock. I mean, like a 1 in a million chance to pull this off, and I made it, shot a buck, and not much excitement was going on, not a lot of adrenaline with the compound. And then Brian Broderick was with me. He's a guy I partnered up with on day six. Broderick, the same day, that afternoon, we went on a stalk, and the adrenaline level I had when he had his longbow in my hand, and he knew it, he could see it in my eyes. He's like, yeah, he's coming back to the dark side, or the bright side, however you want to look at it. And when he shot that animal's, I don't know, 7 yards or something, I was, you know, in my mind, I didn't tell anybody, in my mind I'm thinking, man, this is my passion. Like, what am I doing shooting the compound? And I, you know, there's a lot of compound guys that hate on stick bow guys. I was one of them. And, you know, they use it as an excuse to suck.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I think I can be as successful or more so with this stick. I just have to buckle down. And I've never said this before on a podcast or to anybody, but in my mind I thought, I'm going to prove to myself I can be more lethal with a stick bow than I ever was, or anyone can be with a compound. And I'm, again, I'll sound arrogant. I'm doing a good job.
First, this podcast, we talked about how Aaron was humble. So.
But okay. I wanted to be at a position, and it's happened, where if a stick bow, a compound guy is making fun of a stick bow guy, I can be like, look,
man,
at me.
That's
I can
the
do
most,
it.
The most, now, I've kind of been humbled the last year with my stick bow, but before that, Aaron, when I came out of that, the streak of, well, it may have been 17, I think it was 17 when I had the seven animals in a row, you've got no choice but to feel like, and this is the way that I've said it, when I pick up that stick bow, I have got to feel like that I can kill any critter on the planet in any situation, or I'm not going to be successful. Because the big transition for me would have been that for years, because I told you I got a stick bow in 2001. David Albright, a bowyer in Arkansas, gave me one. But for 10 years, I wasn't convinced that it was an efficient killing weapon. I mean, I was just like, I'm not going to kill stuff because this bow won't kill stuff, which is ridiculous. They're extremely efficient weapon. The mankind has been birthed on the meat harvested by traditional bows for the last 10,000 years.
Well, more people have been killed in combat with arrows than they have bullets in history. And that's before a compound, because nobody's died in combat from a compound. So right. Give you an idea.
yeah. But that attitude, so I'm identifying with that attitude of, man, I've got to know and not doubt myself, because so much of traditional archery is mental. I mean, massively mental. And
you're only as good as your last shot.
Yeah.
And if your last shot was a bad one, you'd be able to take it on the chin and get back up, or you're going to have a long, long bad streak. And that, I mean, that's really just how it is. There's not really, you know, any way around that. I think Lander's brought up to me, he's like, what's going to happen when you have a bad year? And I'm like, I'm not going to have a bad year. I was like, it's not in me. You know, I probably will, right? But I'm like, I can't let that go on in my mind. I'm like, I'm just not going to have a bad year. Now, I've had some bad hunts. You know, that mule deer hunt was one that was rough. I pissed blood twice. Probably shouldn't have said the P word. I peed blood twice, had some kind of fungus on my hand, growing from whatever, and 12 days into it, 10 days of hunting, whatever it was, I still hadn't had a buck on the ground. Without a doubt, 100% season would have been over the first day with a compound.
Right. Yeah.
Lander had told me, you will eventually get to a point where you won't go on a stock and say, I could have killed it with my compound. And I didn't believe him, but it has happened. It will still cross my mind.
Right.
But the feeling I get after I finally pulled it off with a stick bow is far greater than anything I've felt with a compound. It's more self-fulfilling, I guess you could say. And so being driven or goal-oriented like I am and everything else, the stick bow is just a good fit.
Yeah.
And I have had a good streak of success, and hopefully that continues.
Yeah. Okay, here's my next question is, I'm going to ask you a question, and then I got to tell Colby something. But I don't want to forget the question. What comes after this once you've accomplished it? Because I know that happens inside of me. I set a goal to do something, whether it's a specific type of hunt, a specific way to do it. So that's the question. You've got 5 seconds to think about it. Colby, why don't you go check on our mules? We got our mules out in the parking lot. I had to do this last podcast too, but I didn't do it on the air.
I think that probably once I get to a point where I'm fulfilled enough, I guess, with the stick bow, I'll probably just help other guys and photograph their hunts. Yeah. I don't know that it'll be another hunting.
Do you ever see yourself going more primitive? I mean, is that something you're interested in?
Not now. You know,
I mean, like stone. I mean, because the progression, you know, is to go to like a self bow with a stone point, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, not now. I might go to a long bow at some point, which really might. It's maybe a lateral transition, you know.
It's not really. Yeah, it's not really that different.
Not so much right now. That could change. Really, if I didn't have the love for photography and photographing other people's hunts, that might be different.
Right.
But if I get to a point where, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, this is still fun, but man, I'd really like to go with, you know, Clay on a hunt. Probably just travel around photographing hunts and occasionally hunting.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
You hear older hunters talk about this natural transition inside of hunting. And I bet you're just like me, that when you were 30 years old, you said there's no way that's ever going to happen. So the transition would be, originally you're just like interested in harvesting game, and then you go to more goal orientation, which is like, I want to kill a specific animal in a specific way, in a specific place, and then you get to this place where you want to help others. And I've heard some people talk negatively about that, like, man, I'll fight to never lose that drive to kill stuff. And that's probably what I would have said 10 years ago, Aaron. Because that's, to me, that's a definer of a successful hunter is like this no-quit attitude. And I mean, inside of hunting, the goal is to harvest a target animal. And so I kind of feared that transition. But I'm 39 years old. Yep, check birthday here. And I sort of feel it. Now, I have 4 kids that hunt, but I'm still massively driven to harvest game. I'm not saying that I don't want to, but I can kind of see where, like, and it's not something to be afraid of, like getting to where you're talking about, like where maybe there comes this point where you've proven, and I track it inside of myself by the goals that I've accomplished over the years. You know, like there was a point when I said my goal is to kill a 3.5-year-old buck or older in Arkansas every year with a bow. Mm-hmm. That was my goal when I was 25. And at the time, that was a massive goal. And Arkansas hunting's pretty tough. And I did it for 10 years. And I was like, you know what? I can do that. I still enjoy killing a buck in Arkansas with my bow. Now I've transitioned to bears. I mean, like, and then that's been a lifelong thing. But, like, especially the last 6 years with the magazine, it's like my goals seem to be to travel all over North America killing bears in different. We just came back from Montana on a spot and stalk mule based rifle hunt. I mean, and like that was pretty thrilling to me, even from a long range. I mean, we're carrying a Best of the West long range Husqvarna scope that I could have taken a bear at a long ways, and that was so different from what I grew up in. It was kind of intriguing. And point being, like, I've got this new set of goals, but so are you afraid of that transition, Aaron?
No, it could be a no brains, no headache thing, but I don't think I'm going to hit that transition. I'm different in that way. If as far as like being without coming off sounding like a Neanderthal, and I'm ask Lander, he'll tell you, you got about put a shot collar on me. I haven't, you know, people like, oh, you'll be better trophy hunter as you get older. Not so much. It's not hit me too much. I mean, being as honest as I can be, it's pretty bad. It's still bad. Like, I haven't calmed down much. But if it evolves, I mean, maybe my brain doesn't work quite that way. And right. I think that in some ways, I guess it has evolved to a little bit, but some of it's just by the structure of the hunt, meaning if I go to Oklahoma and they say don't shoot a 5.5 year or a 4.5 or younger buck, I'm very, very good obedient. I don't want to screw that up. I shoot a 5.5 year old deer. Yeah. The problem is if I didn't have that rule, there's no telling what I would shoot. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to shoot a Forky, but I probably would have some trouble maintaining that 5.5 year old. That's just me. And Lander will be the first guy to tell you that I am the happiest guy alive, whether it's a 150-inch deer or a 190-inch deer. Yeah. Not, I just like hunting. Now, I want to get beat up in the middle of it. I don't want to gimme 200-inch deer. I want to work for one. And it's hard for people to understand because everybody's brains work differently. I would rather see a guy earn a 150-inch mule deer than shoot a gimme 200. The deer doesn't matter to me. It's the story behind it. And a lot of guys didn't believe that until they'd hunted with me, Lander being one of them. I truly wanted to see. I like the adventure of the hunt, and the animal is kind of, I'm not taking it away from the animal. I'm just saying that right. The animal is a byproduct of the hunt. The hunt is what's important. But I also think that if you're out there not taking animals, you know, maybe take up golf or maybe put some more effort into it unless you just like to hike around, because a lot of people seem to hunt to just go hunting.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, but you also have to, you know, you can only blame yourself. And so maybe you should focus less on buying the coolest, newest gear and maybe focus more on fieldcraft and shooting your bow or something. Not to get off the subject of that, but you get out of it what you put into it, and you can't blame anybody but yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, last traditional archery question, unless you want to talk about something else, Aaron. So inside of all this talk with the Klum method, which I've been just recently kind of following some of that, and it's influenced some of the things that I'm doing. Some of it, I told Colby, some of these things, it wasn't a dramatic shift with a few things. Aaron, what would you say is the most impacting thing inside of your traditional archery form and shot? So we're getting like tech nerd, trad archery. Because I know there's all these different things that you could say. What would you say would be the most critical component of an accurate shooter in terms of mechanics?
Man, it'd be hard to pick just one. In fact, I'm not going to do it because then that would like sell it way short. But I would have to say just the general shot execution as far as the proper steps that you take initially, meaning, having this, I'm going to simplify it, having the same anchor point every time, having the same clean release every time, repeatability is extremely important. But I'm going to rabbit hole really bad. I just read an article in a magazine that basically poo-pooed on 3-under and gap shooting, and okay. You can't be successful that way. That's what I do, and I've shot more animals than, again, sounding arrogant, anyone I know of in 2 years.
That humble comment. I said exactly. Earlier.
And this is where I get in trouble is statements like this. And I'm not saying it as a bragging thing. What I'm saying is, if one guy wants to snap shoot and swing shoot, I'm not going to stop him, right? But to say that the method that I was taught by through Tom Klum can't be successful hunting, well, I'm living proof that that is a lie. That is wrong. Yeah. And how many snap shooters do you know that can't hit a bull? And I'm about to cuss. I'm going to rewind. That can't hit
that
a barn
good,
wall.
That was really good.
Yeah. They can't hit a barn wall from the inside of the barn. I know a lot of them. A lot of them actually give me crap about the struggle stick comment when I know they can't shoot worth the crap. I mean, it is what it is. I think that if you get taught correctly out of the gate, you can choose to snap shoot if needed. If you get taught to snap shoot out of the gate, you cannot choose to shoot correctly. Yeah. And that's not really an argument. The sun will come up tomorrow. It is as sure as that. How many snap shooters do you know that have to close their eyes to hold it full draw? Pretty much everyone I know. How many guys that that go to full draw and operate a clicker correctly, can you say, hey, will you snap shoot quick, and they can snap
can
shoot
it. Yeah. So you're saying if you build the foundations right, then you have totally a lot more options inside your shooting.
As long as you've got mental control, you can do. I mean, I snap shoot whitetails all the time. If they walk by and I gotta snap, I'm not saying run by, but walking by, I can snap shoot. I'm not pulling through the clicker. If it's a noise situation where there's a chance that that buck might, I know when it's going to go off to a certain degree. If I have to, you know, just start my back tension and fire a little early, I've made a conscious decision when to shoot that bow.
Yeah.
When you're a snap shooter, there's no conscious decision. It hits your face and it's gone.
Yeah.
There are some people that are decent that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, the swing snap shooting is in my very short career, is a recipe for disaster for long term.
Have you ever read the book Instinctive Shooting by Fred Asbell?
I'm talking about Fred Asbell. Yeah, don't follow anything that says, in my opinion.
Okay.
If you want to have a lifelong history or a lifelong career of snap shooting and target panic, read that book and memorize it. And I'm not taking away from anything he's done for the sport. The guy has been amazing
for it.
I'm just saying, if you don't want to get target panic and you want to be accurate, I would follow what Tom Klum has to say.
Is that's the book that taught me how to shoot traditional archery, Aaron.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I totally follow it 100%, but the ideas of instinctive shooting that he, like I did snap shoot for years, and I do to some degree still today. And I want to tell you just my little, just a short spiel, but some of the ideas that he gave me some foundations about bow arm, a draw that was going to the same place every time, clean release. Now, he was split fingers. At one point, I saw Barry Wenzel, I think, shoot 3 under. I had trouble for 10 years with accuracy shooting split fingers. And one day, I saw, I think it was Barry Wenzel, shoot with 3 under, and it just made sense. I literally got out of my... turned the TV off and watching the DVD or something, went and got my bow, and my shooting was like incredibly better. But let's see, where am I going with this? That did give me some good foundation, just the mechanics, the idea that that bow will shoot the same every single time if you do the same thing every single time.
That can't be argued. And that's why I say there is things he says that I agree with.
Right.
There's other things that are a recipe. Well, let's say he's got the strongest mind in the world, which he must have if he's never had target panic.
Yeah,
The snap shooting, let her rip, tater chip. If you can do that, you're not going to have a problem. The problem is most people can't.
I think it's close range. And this is what I was going to say, Aaron. My focus inside of traditional archery has been to kill game inside of 14 yards.
Right.
And the way that I've done it, that's worked for me.
Right.
I've wounded and missed less game with the traditional bow than I have with my compound, but it's because I've the style of hunting that I do, which I'm not hunting out west trying to stalk a mule deer and get a 40-yard shot, not hunting mountain goat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hunting.
Yeah.
So I go back to that to say, you know, it does work if you have certain limitations. And that's the one thing I remember Fred Asbell in his book saying is that, and this doesn't go against you, please don't take it that way.
I'm not like that. Don't worry about that.
But that you can either become a better shooter or you can become a better hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, get closer. I mean, that's what I remember him saying as 25-year-old reading that book. It was like, so if I can shoot this bow. And really, for years, it was 10 yards. If I got to get within 10 yards a game, and then I can 10 ring them.
Yeah.
And so that became this cool concoction for me that was fun. And so, anyway, so when I see guys like you, which I'm, shooting at 40 yards, man, I can't shoot at 40 yards. I did challenge you jokingly on Facebook the other day and said that I could teach you something about traditional archery. I think you knew that was a joke. Private message, of course.
Well,
but... that's never been my goal to shoot 40, but I have tried to be as good as I could out to 15. Killed some game out past 20, but, you know.
And I'm trying, again, I'll say it, I said it earlier, I'm not taking anything away from what that man has done for the sport.
Right on, yeah.
I mean, but what I am saying is if you, well, I could pick a ton of different other athletes, but let's just focus on this. If well, we're going to use me for an example, and I'll take the brunt of it. Inside of a year with Tom Klum, I was shooting paper plates or smaller at 40 yards,
right,
winning pretty much every tournament I went to and shooting very well and having some success with hunting animals all over the place. I don't think that could be argued that that will work. Right. Now, will it work? And I've talked with the guys at Black Widow that Asbel holds a class there, and it's 10, 15-yard shots. If that's what you're into, I'm not going to, man, I'm the last guy to tell you to shoot farther, but I'm going out there to shoot something. And if I'm proficient at 34, that's going to up my odds.
Yeah.
The 40 yards a bit far. I've taken two animals at 40, and it's certainly not what I prefer.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's a deer bedded at 32, I can shoot softballs at 32 yeah. all day. Do you want to close that distance by half, or do you want to kill it where it lays?
Yeah.
I'm going to
yeah.
kill it where it's laying.
Yeah.
And if I can shoot closer, I've shot animals at 4 feet and at 43 yards and pretty much everywhere in between. I just don't think you can do it consistently past 15 to 18 without Tom's
yeah. system. I agree with you. I mean, that's been – so before – and I'm starting to be influenced by Klum. I'd love to go do a class with him.
Mm-hmm.
But what you just said is exactly right. I with the methods that I've used, I have been very proficient out to 15, 18 yards.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's probably maybe the limitation of a guy that is shooting that. And there's plenty of guys that could shoot better than that, because I think inside of that, then there's like the individual talent and skill and hand-eye coordination and ability of the individual archer,
mm-hmm.
which varies greatly. There's yeah. some guys that are just naturals, some guys that are not. I think I'm probably in the, you know, I'm proficient with it. I'm in there. I'm not going to say where I think I'm at. Point being, I think that sometimes, especially in the traditional archery world, there's so much. I think a guy's goals have to be factored in. And you're such a great and dominant personality inside of it. I guess, you know, it's not the only way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What you're saying is 1,000% right. To be accurate out to 40, I'm totally convinced after what I've heard that a guy could still be successful inside of snap shooting and just getting into 15 yards.
Yeah, and the big thing, just so I'm not taking too far out of context, how many people do you know are going to be on the ninth day of a mule deer hunt snap shooting consistently or whatever you want to call it, and have an animal at 28 and not take the shot?
Right, exactly.
Not
I'm
many,
with you.
Many. And so for me, and again, I'm green, right? I just started doing this. That guy's been in here longer than I've been alive. Okay, so again, but it's going to be hard to convince me that the most, that what Tom teaches is not the most proficient way,
because
you can choose to snap shoot with Tom's system.
And I like that. I like what you just said there. I think it probably is.
Well, that's all I know. But what I, you know, when I say that's all I know of a bunch of 38, 45-year-old to 60-year-old men that can't hold the string to their face without closing their eyes and literally short draw, and they tell me their bow's 70 pounds at 28, but they're drawn to a solid 25 and a half because they're snap shooting. And I'm going off of what I've seen. And again, I'm very blunt and very open. You can't take away what I've seen because I've seen it. And you can't take away the fact that I see guys that can't hit the bale at 20 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm not, this isn't just a compound guys the same way. I'm not picking on trad archers. What I've seen, though, is Tom take a guy brand new, green, mold that guy into someone who's proficient in a very short period of time at 20 yards. He may never shoot past 20, but he's also not going to suffer from target panic as quick.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
not going to suffer from short drawing as quick. And when you, well, you're overbowed, but when you use the snap shooting method, it is very prone to short drawing.
Right.
And short drawing is bad. And trying to keep me out of this too much, I look at the God, how am I going to put this without getting in too much trouble? There was a reason when I got into traditional archery, I didn't want to get into it. Okay, there wasn't really a spokesman, and I'm not saying I'm the spokesman, but there wasn't a spokesman that made it cool.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of spokesmen that make it cool now. That doesn't mean distance. That just means it's a cool thing to do.
Right.
And it's highlighted the reasons why you should be doing it to make it, I say cool, but really to get people to want to do it.
Aaron, what I always said was that trad archery, when I was growing up shooting 3D targets with my dad, was all the old men shot trad.
Yeah.
It was an old man sport.
Yeah.
But now we've got this cast of people that are making it cool.
Yeah. I'm excited about it because it's changed me, as not only just as a hunter, but as a person. And I don't know if I'm hunting for different reasons, but I'm certainly out there for the challenge, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think that I'm picking on the old crowd or Asbel. I'm just stating what I've seen. And it would be interesting to have Tom and Fred on a debate. I would like to hear them go back and forth. I'm not going to be able to do it. I haven't done it long enough. They're going to be like, this guy's green.
You know, I bet they would. And I don't want to pit them against each other, though, Aaron. You know what I mean? Like, their methods are different for sure. But just like in anything, there's different ways to do stuff with different goals. And man, both of those guys, in my mind, are iconic heroes of traditional archery. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. But I certainly
wouldn't look at it as pitting them against each other.
Right.
What I would do is it gives two people two ways. Okay, Republican, Democrat. If a guy's green and just getting into, you know, who am I going to vote for? You're not pitting two people against each other. You're just hearing
their
sides.
Trying to gather the facts.
And then they can choose for themselves.
And I don't think there's any conflict, really, like in terms of, I think people, when they see Clum's method, it makes sense. I mean, to me, and I told you, I was absolutely influenced by Asbel.
Yeah.
With his book. I've got it on my shelf. It's like an iconic book, got me started. And when I started seeing this stuff with Clum, I was like, yeah, this makes sense what he's saying. It makes a ton of sense. And I'm kind of gradually moving that direction 100%. So, I mean, I think what we're seeing inside the traditional archery world is a natural progression that we find inside of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a way of doing things, and then all of a sudden there's a new generation of people that say, hey, there's a better way to do this. And then there's going to be some people from the old that pick on that guy and get mad at him. But, you know, and I think that's not really the part to focus on, you know. But I think what you're doing is awesome. It's helped me. That's all I can say is that it really has. It's inspired me to be a better traditional archer, and I think it's working. And it's because of stuff that I'm following and checking out Clum. And Tyler Friel, a friend of mine, writes for Barony Magazine some. I know he's been with Clum. And it's cool stuff.
Yeah,
it really is. It's cool stuff. I like it.
I like the fact that when I started, there wasn't anyone to go to. Okay, there wasn't any social media guy. South was one, but South, like South's a mule deer guy, not a. When
How
I say
does
that,
South shoot? I've never. I can't
he
remember.
He shoots a lot better now than he did when I first met him. He can shoot pretty good now.
I mean, is he?
Oh yeah, he's got a clicker on in the whole nine yards.
Colby, how were the mules?
Fantastic.
Were they? They're just chilling out in there.
Yeah, just looking at a bear hide.
Some pellets. We should have given him some pellets.
Yeah.
Later.
I think that you know, you're never going to be able to make traditional archery a long-distance sport, meaning it's just capabilities of it, right? I mean, you can't shoot far accurately, no matter how. I mean, there's times that I'll shoot a paper plate at 55, 60 yards if I have something I can hold on with my point over, not a shot I'm going to take. I guess on a second arrow I might attempt that. But
yeah, if you hit it the first time.
Yeah, exactly. If I've made a shot and I think, man, I need to get another arrow in it. But Randy and Denny, Randy Cooling and Denny Sturgis said you should at least have a plan for a longer shot. I agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a bad idea. You get one and you need to get another one in it. You should at least have a decent idea rather than just gripping and ripping.
Yeah.
They face walk, they different anchor points,
okay,
which I never messed. That's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever read like Fred Bear's field notes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shot it at 40, went under it. Shot it at 50, went under it, shot it at 60, went under it, hit it in the femoral at 70. Okay, well, obviously, the founder of archery was winging them out there. Okay, if it doesn't take too long to read that, I think he shot his leopard at 100 and some yards.
I don't remember.
It's far. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying follow that footstep, or you should do
that. We really
that.
Can't do that anymore.
Right. For what? Why is that? Why can't we follow Fred
we,
Bear?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm
oh,
just
I'm
saying,
not saying we should. I'm
just
asking
saying
you
because
a question.
The world is so much more transparent than it used to be.
Because of social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying I wanted you to say it. Everything's out there now. Right.
Right.
So it's should we or shouldn't we? We should certainly shouldn't post it. Okay. That's without a doubt. No one should see that. Should we, as far as accuracy? Probably not, because I don't think very many people are that accurate at that distance. When I say that distance, past 40.
Yeah,
I think
you bet.
40 and in, 40's 10% of the time, 5% of the time, meaning right person, right place, right time, probably maybe 5. So inside of 20, yeah, it's an 80%, right? Inside of, for the most part. That 20 to 40, it's all on each person. Most people, if they're in the woods, are going to be accurate out to 18 or 20.
Yep.
They probably shouldn't be in the woods, because it's pretty hard to get closer than 10, 15, 20 yards.
Yep.
My looking at this, starting out with a compound where I could shoot over 100 consistently, I had to immediately change my hunting style, right? I totally wore reversal. I had to become more patient. I had to see animal behavior. Well, when the animal stands up at 70 and you just shoot it, you're not seeing a lot of animal behavior. Now at 70, that may be 4 more hours before I get to take a shot. So it's made me, and what I would hope that it would help other people, is become more of a animal aficionado. You're becoming a better hunter as you do this. Does the 40-yard thing help? Oh, yeah. The fact I can shoot 40 in paper plate to softball sizes, it puts me a step above where I can take that shot in the right situation. That right situation is generally a bedded animal, because the arrow
can't
ain't getting
jump
there
the string, really.
Yeah. And the bows are quiet enough that they generally don't hear it go off. And I've got a point to all of this. I think that when people look at traditional archery, I think they should look at it as, you say, progression. You know, that's one way to look at it. If you're bored with a compound, you should pick up a stick bow.
Yep.
If you suck with a compound, pick up a stick bow. You already suck, right? a stick bow's funner. And I hate to be that blunt, but it's true. If you're just not a good shot with a compound, pick up a stick bow, start from scratch, get coaching. I can tell you now, it's a hell of a lot funner to suck with a stick bow than it is with a compound. Because with a stick bow, you can stump shoot, you can shoot squirrels, you can shoot things you just can't really do with the compound. That probably sounded harsh, but it's true. I know a lot of guys that aren't real proficient out to 30 with a compound. I'm like, dude, pick up a stick bow, start over. You've already got all these bad habits ingrained in your brain with a compound.
You can start from scratch.
Start fresh. Yeah, exactly. And I think I try to point people in that direction. And there's some guys that shouldn't have a stick bow or a compound in their hand. You know, there's some guys that they should maybe not be hunting. When I say that, I mean they need to put more effort into it, maybe, is what I should say. So anyway, I'm going down the rabbit hole here.
Well, to me, what I've always liked about traditional archery is that, and I think, Aaron, it's the reason that I got into it originally. Now, it took me a while to get, like, deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
Was because you cannot fake being a trad bow shooter.
No.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, compound archery is so proficient. Like, compound, the technology of a compound bow is so proficient. I can take my daughter out, and within 2 hours of buying her a new compound bow, she can pretty much be ready to bow hunt a whitetail deer inside of 15 yards in probably 2 hours.
Yeah. Minus adrenaline. Yeah. Proficiency, 100%.
Just to hit a target.
Yeah.
And, man, you can't fake being a trad archer and be successful.
Yeah.
Now, you can get lucky. You can. But, I mean, I think that, to me, is probably one of the bigger things that I like about it, and what I respected about these old traditional archers that I did know, is that they were authentic.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, that's probably in me, like, the magnetism that I see, that I that I like inside of people is when I see somebody that's authentic. Mm-hmm. And a lot, and some of the traditional archers, and specifically I'm talking about, and I doubt he'll listen to this podcast, but my brother's father-in-law, David Albright, a bowyer in Arkansas. Man, when he talked to me about bow hunting, and I was a compound archer when I was in my early, in my early 20s when I was talking to him about traditional archery, and I was like, man, that's the way to bow hunt. And to this day, I still shoot some compound, but I recognize that you couldn't fake what he was doing and be successful. That's what I like about it.
I'm looking up David Albright. Where have I heard that name before? Is he a bowyer?
He's a bowyer. I don't even know if you'll find David online. He's my brother's father-in-law. He'd been making bows for years and years. He killed 155-inch deer on a public ground in the Ouachita Mountains of Arkansas with his trad bow this year. Just a legit guy.
I've heard that name before, and there's only reason why I was playing with my phone to look it up. Yeah. But I agree. I just met Marv Klinke, who's like a legend in Colorado, for the first time like an hour and a half ago. I just said, hey, it's an honor to meet you. And not knowing the guy, and I'm not taking away, he's done more for traditional archery and bow hunting in Colorado than anyone. In my opinion, it's the fact I know what he's killed, and I know how close he's killed it, and that's amazing to me. I'm enamored by that, especially coming from the compound, and then the first year kind of having the, pitfall or stumbling and everything else, and then gaining more and more success and knowing what it takes, the fact you might be laying there for 5 or 6 hours at 60 yards to hopefully get a shot. Well, how many times has he done that? The dude's 78 years old. Okay, so he's done that a lot, right? Who knows how many times, because he's got a pile of big deer on the wall, high country bucks. And so I agree. I mean, to me, like some of the guys that are super successful with a stick bow, I'm looking at, there's a lot of admiration there for what they've done.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Tom's clinic, so they're shooting that close. I mean, when I say Tom, there's the push guys are really helpful. Joel's kind of a brain doctor, Turner.
And then
there's a coach that Randy and Denny use a lot, and he's kind of the same as Tom as far as that goes. I just forgot his name. Rod Jenkins. He's another coach down south that's great for kind of teaching more of the. Tom and I argue sometimes. I'll say that right now. when it comes to his methods and what he taught me and how I've morphed them. Do you want to talk about this at all as I'm running at the mouth?
Whatever you want, man. The next thought I have in my mind is I want to talk to you. I want to tell you about my bow.
Okay. The thing with Tom is there's things that he taught me, more Fita style shooting, that I have not done. I hunch over, right? I can't. I don't curl the wrist as much and do draw into the clicker like he teaches, because I think it's harder to draw into the clicker that way consistently with an animal in front of you. Mm-hmm. So even though I should be drawing that way, I draw differently because my clicker goes off at a different time and I want it to be consistent. I don't think that alignment, the release, things like that can be argued, whether it's Asbel or Tom, that needs to be the same every time, right?
Right.
You got to do that. Where I think that people struggle, not necessarily is just the coaching. They get a bow, they're 6'1" and have a 29-inch draw, and their buddy gives them a 56-inch bow, and the arrows aren't flying right, and they don't know what to do. So the moral of my story is here, whosever path you follow, find someone you need help in the beginning. You're not going to just walk into it like a compound. You can wing it and still be successful.
Yep.
You can't wing it you can't wing it with a stick bow.
100%.
But go ahead. 100%. Tell me about your bow.
Well, now, so the bow that I'm currently shooting and have shot for several years now, or the brand would be Timber Ghost Traditional Bows. And we talked about it one time, and I tried to get Kent to send you one at the time, but it just didn't work out. But what I'm shooting right now is a Timber Ghost. He calls it a G3SS.
Mm-hmm.
It's a takedown bow. Belly mount limbs are belly mounted, kind of like the Black Widow. Aaron, but it has a super static. The SS of the G3SS stands for super static. And it's one of the fastest bows, recurve bows on the planet.
It looks like it'd be fast. It's got some curly tipped limbs on that bad boy.
Yes. And it's, man, it feels super good in hand. It's quiet. It's pretty short. He makes different size risers. I've got the 13-inch riser, I think. I'd rather have an 11-inch riser. But super sweet bow, man, for real. Kent, I think, is doing some stuff that's pretty revolutionary inside the trad bow, you know, the bow of your world. But anyway, you ought to shoot it. I got it out in the truck.
Yeah, I got my targets in the back, so we can do that. I'm looking at it now. I definitely have fallen in love with the Widow. I've shot a pile of different bows, though. I'm one of those, I say weird guys, but like 5-inch feathers. I get crap about shooting 5-inch feathers. Well, I've killed a lot of stuff with 5-inch feathers. I'm afraid to switch. I mean, I said that on a podcast the other day. They're like, why don't you shoot smaller feathers? And I'm like, well, I'm not dropping bombs at 80 yards. Wind isn't really... first and foremost, wind drift in my mind. I'm trying to shoot things sub 20, so I don't worry about it. But yeah, that looks like it. That is a slick looking bow.
Yeah, Kent's a good guy. Kent's a good friend of mine. He's a bowyer there in Arkansas.
He's okay. I was gonna say he's out of Arkansas.
My favorite bow that he makes though is the Timber Ghost Smoke bow, which is a 56 inch hybrid longbow. And I feel like I just shoot it really well, but the riser's really small. And I'm not a big guy, so I like a smaller bow. But anyway, I'd love for you to just hold it in your hand out there, Aaron. You could shoot an arrow out of it.
Yeah, I'll have to fling a few.
Man, when you ditched me in British Columbia, I actually hadn't planned on shooting trad.
Yeah.
In my spring bear season.
Yeah.
And so like 3 weeks ago, Jeff Lander was like, hey, Aaron's going to be in camp. You ought to come. I said, okay, I'll come. So, Colby, what did I do? Started shooting a trad bow out of the global headquarters of Bear Hunting Magazine lot. And I'm being completely transparent. Man, I had put the bow down and hadn't shot it that much. But I carried it to Montana on this rifle hunt, and we were planning on shooting every day, but I ended up stinking chasing bears so hard we had a tough hunt. Good, awesome, incredible adventure, incredible monumental thing for me. I train mules, and that's a new thing in my world. Didn't grow up doing it, but 3 years ago I trained a mule. My goal was to take to Montana and bear hunt on it, and so this was the completion of that quest. And long story short, we were in the backcountry so much I didn't even get to shoot, but I'm going to British Columbia next week, and I'm going to have to do some cleanup, but I'm going to have to shoot. I'm shooting good, but...
Yeah, you're stacking them in there.
But...
Yeah, Jeff
was... I'm going to have to get closer.
Funny, he called me and said, can you not shoot one? It's like... super quick, and I'm like, I've shot a bunch of them. What do you want me to wait for? He said, Clay's coming up. Can you wait to shoot one till he gets there? And I'm like, yeah, man, I'll wait if you want me to. I've had good success.
We were going to film you, man.
Which is good because I hate being on film.
That's
funny. The first, and I'll try and keep this short. I shot a turkey with my bow in 16 was the first animal. But when I had gone up there, you know, I had all these things people were telling me, the clums. And anyway, all these different, you know, your hunt begins where it ends with the compound, and you know,
that was pretty poetic.
It was true.
That was nice, Aaron.
Went up with this stock, and I'm looking at this bear at 40 yards, and I'm thinking you would be so dead if I had my compound, right? And came back out, went back in on a different approach, and I don't know what I was 40 something from it, and I'm like, I just don't think I can hit it, you know. And even now, I wouldn't take the shot, and I can shoot 40, just bad angle and everything else. So I mouse squeaked, and it came right in, and they're kind of blind, and it stood on this log above me close, and I thought, I'm just going to shoot it on a frontal. You know, I'd taken lots of elk on a frontal deer, and I shot, and whether I collapsed or crapped my pants or whatever, shot between its feet. And Tom Sr. told me, you will kill multiple animals on your second arrow, guaranteed. They don't know it gone off. With a compound, that's a done deal. They're gone. bear kind of picked up his paw and looked at it, and I thought, would I shoot his toenail off? Jeez, and put it back down, turned broadside, and I'm like, okay, I got another chance. And I hit him on that one, and it was a big thing because, you know, picking up the stick, and am I going to be able to do this? And it was great with Lander, so, and it was ended up being a big bear. Did I write an article?
Yeah,
for you
that was in Bear Hunting Magazine. Your first traditional archer kills in Bear Hunting Magazine, or big game kill.
Big game kill. So, you know, I had done that, and then, you know, fast forward a little bit, did pretty well at tournaments, and I'm like, you know, this isn't going to be that bad. Well, then opening day of season elk and deer, yeah, I missed a deer three times at 17, 20 something, and I don't know. And so we hunted some more for elk after that, and I think I clipped an elk in the leg, and I had lots of other shots I didn't take that I would have, but I just didn't feel comfortable with. And we came back, you know, it's probably September 5th or something, so 6-7 days into season, and came back for a couple days from the elk hunt, and Frank and I went out for a day hunt, and I ended up shooting a mule deer at 4 feet. Like, literally, my broadhead was between its antlers when I drew back, like, close. Frank saw it all, photos. And that was a super addicting thing. I would have never done that. You know, it was one of those, I'm in my socks, and end up standing on the rock above it, shoot it straight down. Unbelievable. Well, by some miracle, I end up killing an elk a few days after that. Well, anyway, fast forward, I'm in Alberta with Jeff, and I didn't know the success rate up there with a stick bow was like 0.0000001%, right? So I get a shot on the second day that I missed, and I end up killing a tank. It's on the wall out there on whatever day it was, and Jeff says, you're the third one. Mm. And I'm like, third one what? And he's like, third one to kill one with a stick bow up here in like 18 years. And I'm like, well, you didn't tell me that crap when you told me to come up here and hunt. I thought it was gonna be easy, and it ended up being a big deer, and I'm like, all right, I can do this, right? And I think that the help, I guess what I'm leading up to, is because of Lander and Tom and other guys, my buddy Paul and many other people, the help they've given me has been, I mean, it can't be quantified in with shooting a stick bow, right? And I try to be that person for other people now, because it is something that'll, I mean, it'll change your life, in my opinion, if you really stick with it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I have to say about that.
Right on, man. Right on. How long have we been going, Colby?
1 hour and 24 minutes and 46 seconds.
Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to meet up with me, Aaron. Really appreciate it, man.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on here. And I'm sorry, I had to be an adult for a little bit and be at work, so I'm sorry I stood you up in BC. But look at it this way, that's more bears for you. So.
Right. More bears. Well, Colby, any closing questions or anything that we had? I mean, I didn't really have a massive agenda with Aaron. I just wanted to come by and see Kafaru, want to see some of the stuff, wanted to outshoot Aaron in the back here quickly. No, I'm kidding. We probably got to go pretty quick, but we're driving home to Arkansas tonight. We got about a 12-hour drive in front of us.
I think to sum it up, just from like listening and stuff, it sounds like one of the things you really do is just surround yourself with like good people and mentors, you know. It sounds like you grow a lot from just taking away positive aspects from other people. I think that's a good trait to have.
Definitely, yeah. And guys that keep you in check. If you surround yourself with people that tell you you're awesome all the time, pretty soon you can do no wrong. I'm between Brian Broderick and Clay and Tom and Lander, I am constantly put in check, which I think is also a good thing. So
yeah. I got one more thing. You know, so I just moved to Arkansas from Texas, and my legs are not up to par yet. So we went to Montana, and man, I was struggling. And so I remember one part, like we were doing something on the mountain, and your voice came in my head and just says, "Suck it up, Buttercup." Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know if you've ever said that.
Oh,
but,
no, I say it all the time. Yeah. But there's a lot of other things I say too. Did it help?
It did.
Well, there you go.
It did. Well, just I realized that my fitness isn't going to get me up this mountain. I just got to get tough. You know, I just got to have some mental toughness and push through. So, yeah, because I was pretty sure you had actually said that, because the first podcast I think I ever listened to was
You need to get Aaron to say that to put it on your voicemail.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah.
Hey, Colby only fell off the mule one time.
That's good.
I'd only ridden a mule
60 miles. We rode 58 miles on mules in the last 6 days.
I'm not not so much for me. I'm not a not. I mean, what is they're dodgy in the front and back and untrustworthy in the middle.
That's about right.
I rode one with Bart, a horse, on the goat hunt. And I ejected off it several times. I got really good at ejecting off, which I should have. I know. I'm glad I can help, and I truly. I hate to say it, I know more overweight successful hunters than I do skinny ones. So there's something to be said about mental toughness. It goes a long way.
I think that's a massive thing. That, you know, there's so much of a trend inside outdoor world right now about physical fitness, which is fantastic. It's a good thing to be physically fit. It's a good thing to take care of your body, but it's not the only thing.
Nope.
I mean, and I'm not in any way trashing. I mean, you know, we got to be physically fit to be able to stay doing what we're doing as long as we can. But that's my goal inside of physical fitness, is just I want to be hunting, you know, when I'm 60 and 70 years old. That means I got to take care of my body. It means I can't be, you know, but you don't have to be an ultra athlete to go hunting and be successful.
Yep.
No.
But it helps. It does help.
You look at, like with Cam. Cam pretty much hunts on private land now, and he's still extremely fit, right? So, but, you know, he was getting it done backpack hunting years ago. He doesn't do it as much now. But the thing that I try to explain to people, if you were going to tier importance, okay, you know, shooting is important, animal anatomy is important, bushcraft is important, and physical fitness is certainly not up, in my opinion, in the top three. They're important, but, well, yeah. I'd say fitness is mid-road, because if you're smart, you know, animal behavior, you can go up the mountain a hell of a lot slower than if you suck at animal behavior, because you're going to blow it out and you're going to have to need you're going to need physical fitness.
Yeah.
If you know animal behavior and you're smart and bushcraft, physical fitness isn't important, because there's a good chance you'll get it done the first time. And that's what I try to explain to guys. And so you need to have the total package.
Right on. Yeah. You know, for what the mule, the reason I like hunting off mules, Aaron, is totally I'm from Arkansas, and the Ozarks kind of the mule epicenter of North America in many rights in terms of training and breeding, so it's kind of a cultural thing, you know. I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah,
I enjoy the training of it. But on this hunt, and this was the first time that I've done it myself, brought my own animals and hunted, it was massively successful in terms of us getting on game. Especially Colby just self-admitted that he wasn't physically ready for Montana. I told him we were going a week before we left.
Yeah.
Okay, so
you're a ginger. You're already at a disadvantage. Yes. I'm afraid to look you in the eye. You're still my soul.
Right.
So he wasn't ready, and that's not a shameful thing. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been ready if you told me a week before we went.
Yeah,
but the mules compensated for that. Now he had to be tougher in other areas,
because
he had to learn how to ride a mule and stay on it and not be afraid of it, and he did awesome in that. But it was fun though. It was a ton of fun. But Aaron, hey, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it. Everybody knows where they can find Aaron Snyder's podcast, Kafaru podcast. And Aaron writes
Kafaru
at least
cast.
Kafaru cast, my bad. Aaron writes, for the last 3 or 4 years you've written at least one article a year for Bear Hunting
if
Magazine.
If you hound me enough,
Yes.
Right. Which is amazing, because I write really for no one else, because I don't have time. But so you like me enough to write for you, or I like you enough to write.
Right on, man. Well, hey, you've been on the cover of Bear Hunting Magazine twice, Aaron.
There you go. If I write one on this predator hunt, will you put me on there again?
Well, if you kill a bear, I can't put a mountain lion on there, even though I want mountain lion articles. I for real do.
Yeah.
I love mountain lion hunting, and I think it ties directly in with our bear houndsmen. Bart. I mean, anybody that's bear hunting with hounds is going to be interested in big game hunting with hounds.
Yeah.
So I totally want a mountain lion article.
Maybe I'll get a big one with Bart in June, and I can wrap them all together about hounds and everything. And I think that's important, that people understand the dynamic of hounds and how important they are with predator control.
Right on.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, hey, thanks, Aaron. And keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Yeah, thanks again.